Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This podcast is a Roifield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centered on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the veggie vision, that is Roifield Brown, and with me I have the close-up cabbage, that is...
Kerry Warbis.
And we are joined by that slice of lemon on a gin glass, who is...
Sunny Ormond, hello darlings.
Oh, good. And the last part of this week's Ambridge Blout and Produce show... folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum comes from Fred the Dog, who's owned by Liz CB. Now, Kerry, people weren't listening last week, were they?
No, because no one has sent us in a new Dumpty Dum.
And Naffle, from all of the 40,000 people that listen to this blooming podcast, you're rubbish, every last one of you.
That's a challenge.
You know what, Sonny? We're going to rely upon you in the next 7 days to send us in a Dumpty Dum. Could you manage that, do you reckon?
Well, I think I probably could, love, yes. I think I probably could.
Smashing. So, folks, you know what? Oh, my God, that's the worst thing I should have said, because no one's going to send one in now, because everybody wants one from you. That one's backfired on me.
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105. Leave us a message on SpeakPipe or send a text message starting with Dum to 077 862 00690. This Friday at 7 p.m. on August the 28th, we are on Zoom for the Archers Flower and Produce Show Awards. This will be broadcasting live with Quentin Rayner and Rosie Porty. They'll be handing out the awards for these categories: fruit and veg, flowers, animals, food, and arts and crafts. So there's still time to submit your entries for this competition. This year's show will be judged by Carl Bovis.
Oh, he's a photographer, don't you know? He takes pictures of wildlife, but he doesn't do, like, you know, dodgy things with Photoshop. They're real pictures of real animals in real locations.
He's no Edmund. No. Oh, good. Also, Sharon Goodyear.
Now, she's a smashing and a wonderful human being. She does things, she helps our fellow man. Like, she works for a charity, she's selfless. Ooh, and she does not love the Archers.
Lovely. Susie Riddell as well. That's a new addition to the panel.
Oh yes. I believe she's also known by the name Tracy Horobin.
Yes. We also have Royfield Brown, would you believe?
Oh, no.
Who's he? Who's he? Who's he? I don't
know. Some layabout, I don't know. And, and the very delightful Sunny Ormond will be judging too.
Indeed. Ta-da! Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
What's your category? What are you judging?
Well, I don't know yet. I haven't been given my category yet. I'm waiting with bated breath. Gin.
The gin,
yes.
Category.
Anything to do with alcohol is me.
Or the rich man category.
Indeed, indeed. Oh, yes. Mm. Yes, no, I'm not sure yet. I'm waiting with bated breath. It's all terribly exciting.
Ooh, isn't it just on this... Oh, gosh, there's some more stuff in red. Sorry, Kerry.
That's okay. So we'd like to say also thanks to our new social media supremos, to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Mike Hatton for his character counts, Shambridge for her voices, and to Lucy V. Freeman.
I just say, like, Mike Hatton is such a man of mystery to me, because I've asked him repeatedly, come out of the shadows, man. Tell us why you count the appearance of all the characters on The Archers. Mm. And he always doesn't even rebuff. He just, like, ignores me massively. But there he is on the forums, posts his little messages, and every month he does his character counts, sends them in, does all the graphics. Amazing, but not interested in being on mic. He is a dum-de-dum silent.
Oh, he could maybe write into us.
He can, but he won't. You watch. We're nada from him.
Oh, that's a shame.
Sonny, is there kind of somebody in your life, in your world, who you admire from a distance, but they never voice their presence, that, but I'm just trying to include
well,
the conversation.
Well, thank you very much. Well, I mean, you know, if I look at the Archers, I mean, we've got people like Fat Paul, who I would just love to be voiced in some way. I admire him from a distance, that's for sure.
Brilliant. No. We'll have more talk about you and Fat Paul
thank you very much.
On this week's episode, we hear views from Laura, Claire from Clapham. Oh, can I just say, I went down to Welford on Saturday, met up with Claire from Clapham. We had a walk around Big Reservoir, and then we encountered some rather big cows. And I don't mind admitting, I'm a city boy. I didn't realise how big cows actually are.
Oh, they can be.
You can get a lot of beef burgers out of a cow. They're massive creatures. Massive. Yeah. Anyway, Claire from Clapham, thank you for the courgette cake and a wonderful weekend. Kathy, B12 Simon, or from my own hometown, with a spoon from Upper Low East West Side, Christopher and Helen. And, God, what a bumper episode. I tell you what, Sonny and Kerry, people got their money's worth on this episode. We haven't even started. Not only do we have the wonderful Sonny, a.k.a. Lillian, Auntie Kerry Warburton, but we have B Corner. We have proper B Corner action from Sue, who keeps the hive. We've got Sound of the Bees, and she's going to tell us all about bees at the very end of the show.
Oh, so, brilliant.
I tell you what, it doesn't get much better than this. Who needs Netflix when you've got Dundee?
Well, who needs the bee at Ambridge when you've got proper bees? This is for sure.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you're good.
I tell you what,
before we go on to our hot pressing interview of the week, I'm going to press a button. Right then. We had a lot of fun with you about a month ago, didn't we, Sonny?
Yeah, on Zoom. It was lovely.
It was lovely. You had that nice blouse on. Your mum loved it. So did the listeners. And then we were kind of like, we had a little gin in your honour, didn't we?
Yeah,
everybody was there having a little bit of a tipple.
Yeah.
Though you tricked us. You were only drinking water.
I was, sadly, yeah. But you should have seen me afterwards. wasn't water then.
Very obviously, you guys have gone back to the mailbox now. How has that been? What's the setup like?
Well, I mean, it was quite extraordinary. Yes, in fact, I went in to record last week for the first time since March, because I've been recording in my bedroom, you know, remotely. It was extraordinary. I mean, it was wonderful, first of all, to be back in studio, that's for sure. But the experience was very different. I mean, immediately that I walked through the doors into the BBC, you know, I had to have my temperature taken and so on. And there are arrows which are taking you on very specific routes up and down into the building, and indeed, you know, to the archers area. We weren't in the normal green room because I think they were concerned about the air conditioning there, so we were in a much more open space. We couldn't touch a thing. I mean, if we were supposed to, for instance, eat or drink in the scenes, we had to bring our own food with us. Various things like bottles were still being opened by our spot person, but eating and drinking we had to do ourselves. And certainly once we got into studio, as I say, we couldn't touch a thing. We each had our separate mics. We were all 2 meters apart. The spot person who basically does all our props, she normally is with us on mic, but she was way at the other side of the studio with her own particular mic. All the areas were cordoned off, so you knew exactly where you couldn't be. We had a director with us in the studio, but at a good distance away from us, because normally the director is in the cubicle where everything's recorded, but they're only allowed two people in the cubicle now. So you've got the person who was recording it, and then you've got the person on grams who was doing the sound. So there were two there. So the producer was with us, but at a very good distance from us. And he was on cans and so on and so forth. I did scenes. There were just two of us. I mean, I think for the time being, basically, you know, it's going to be recorded combination of both studio and remotely from home, and we'll still be in this situation. We are doing scenes, but mainly, you know, two-handers and solo pieces as well, just until the situation changes. It's a very fluid situation that we're in, I think. But it was certainly great to be back in studio. But it was a bit like the Marie Celeste, I have to say, you know, the mailbox, because, of course, only people are in there who really have to be in there because for safety, really, you know, keeping a distance. It was just lovely to have, you know, your fellow actors, albeit, you know, a good way away from you. Normally you'd be very close on mic, but at least they were there. And that felt really good. That felt really good.
Yeah. So some essence of normality, which must be great.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so there were just two of you acting at one time.
Yeah, in my particular scene. I think there were other people recording. There could have been three, but I think no more, because the problem is it's the studio, Kerry. You know, you've got to maintain this distance between you, so you could only have a limited number of people within the studio. But it's great now that we've got the duologues that are happening, you know, which are going out now. I mean, that's because it has been tough. It's been, yeah. I know we've all touched on all this before, and I know it's been really tough for the listener as well, because it's quite hard work, you know, listening to monologues. We have to put a lot more into it as the listener, I think. But, you know, it was the only way, it was the safest way initially that we could continue the Archers. It was either that or nothing. And I know that Jeremy, who's our editor, was very aware that there are a lot of people who listen to the Archers who may have been put into isolation. And he felt that because of the COVID situation, he wanted to make sure there was a continuity of the programme for them. But it was, you know, there was no time to assess what we were doing. 12 weeks worth, I think I said this before, but of stories were just abandoned, you know. So there was no time to experiment. We just had to get something on air.
Yeah. So when there were the two of you back in studio, did you feel, was it so very different from how you used to do things in the studio? Did it make you behave in a different way, or did you just manage to snap straight into?
I think we managed just to snap straight into it, really. Because, I mean, the thing about radio as well, you know, even though you're sharing a microphone normally with somebody, you're still very much focused on the microphone. So you kind of got split vision often as a radio actor. You know, you've got to keep focused on the microphone, but at the same time, you've got your fellow actor there. So it wasn't too different in that sense. It's just that you weren't quite as close. No, we just sort of, you know, and it was just great to be able to be on the floor with the director, you know, say, can we do this? Shall we try this? It was just the speed of the process. We're back to normal again with it. And so it felt very creative. You know, it was great.
It was interesting that you talked about the speed. And I think that's one of the things which many listeners didn't quite appreciate with the monologues, you know, that actually the whole process was slower. So could you just maybe flesh out an example for us of how having a director physically there speeds up the whole process of
Because, I mean, for example, doing the work remotely, as we have been, you know, there's myself as an actor in my little room wherever I am. And then down the line in a separate area, you've got our technician who's recording it. And then in a separate area, you've got your director. So you feel very, to start with, very much at a distance. And also when you're recording, there is a delay. I mean, we do all our read-throughs on Zoom, which is great, but, you know, depending on people's Wi-Fi connections and all sorts of things like that, there is a bit of a delay going on. And that's hard for the director, because even though when we've been now doing scenes remotely, which has been great, and you're hearing your fellow actor, I don't know, in Teddington or wherever they are, you know, it's great. But for the director, it's really hard because there's a delay that they're hearing as well. And it's trying to find the rhythm of the piece for them is quite tricky when you've got that delay, because always with scenes, you have arcs of scenes, you have rhythms, you have gear changes. But if you're not hearing it completely in sync, that can quite be quite hard for them. Mm-hmm. So having your director then in studio, literally sort of over your shoulder, it's a much more live experience, really, much more live. Does that answer your question a bit?
I didn't realise you did read-throughs via Zoom either. That's interesting.
We're doing all our read-throughs now, you know, irrespective of whether obviously we're in studio or remotely, we do them all on Zoom, which is great. Mm. We weren't doing that in the, you know, initially. I mean, we were literally thrown in at the deep end. There were no read-throughs. We've got the scripts which flew through our doors, and we were literally just, you know, on mic with the technician, with the director, just launching into it. Whereas as time went on, you know, it was found that we could do read-throughs because everything, you know, we're a bit more accustomed with Zoom. Everybody's using it now, but we have to remember back then in March, it was all so new. Everybody was scrabbling around finding a way of getting things on air and so on and so forth. And the BBC did develop their own software eventually for it. It's quite a complex thing, the recording. I think, you know, people say, well, why can't you just do it on Zoom? Or why can't... But, you know, these programmes have got to go out four times a week. For the technician, it's a heck of a thing to edit it all up. You know, to have the quality that we've got that's going out, and to put the overlays of sounds of goodness knows tractors and goodness knows what on. And that's the other thing. Everybody's Wi-Fi is different, you know. So trying to record, well, it was easier to record with one person was there was a myriad of things that could go wrong then, but at least you were in control of your Wi-Fi. Once you start getting another person in, well, all sorts of things can start to go wrong. And then the recording can take hours and so on.
Yeah. Do you think in some ways it might prove to be useful in the medium to long term that some people may not have to go into studio at times?
Well, who knows, Kerry? It could very well be, you know, maybe some, for instance, of the older members of the cast particularly, you know, who live a long way away. I mean, I'm sure it's, you know, that could be a possibility. I mean, I do know, you know, primarily everybody wants to get back into studio as fast as possible because, you know, there's far more dimension once you can get into a studio. But yes, absolutely, there is always that possibility.
So, you know, after you kind of like got back into the mailbox and you kind of like bumped elbows with your fellow actors, was there any discussion of the reception of the monologues? You know, there was this weekend, there was an article in the Times of which the producer basically has apologised and stuff. And was that at all, and has it at all been demoralising for the actors?
Not for me. I can only speak for myself. I mean, I'm very protective of the process that went on. I'm very protective of our Archers team, and I know how hard everybody worked to get this, you know, up and running and on air. And as I say, there was no time to practice any of this, no time to say, well, is that working? Isn't that not working? Mm-hmm. You know, we were launched in, we were thrown in at the deep end, and actually we were experimenting on air. That was the, you know, the thing really that happened with it. And, you know, this was an unprecedented situation. We'd never been in this sort of situation before. And I just admire very much the Archers team for just trying something. You know, as I say, 12 weeks worth of script were just thrown out the window. And to try and galvanise themselves, to try and rethink some of the storylines, because some just wouldn't work in this scenario. They worked so hard, and they are still working so hard, the team. Because it's a big machine, the Archers. I think people don't quite realise, but, you know, in any only 1 minute. There are so many different storylines going on. Some are long term, some are bigger, some are shorter. There's a huge amount that goes into it. So to have to just scrap it all was really quite tricky. And then, of course, they got to get all the equipment out to the various homes. I mean, you know, it all arrived in huge boxes. It all took a lot of time, thinking time. Mm-hmm. What equipment should we use? What is the best way to do this? What's the best software? You know, it's great. I don't know. To be honest, I don't know what Jeremy said, but, you know, I'm very proud of the team and the fact that we just kept it on air. You learn, don't you, by everything that you do, quite frankly, but usually you have the privacy of maybe a rehearsal room to do it. We were literally in the public arena with it, you know. It was challenging, and it was challenging for the writers because I'm sure they discovered that once they'd done some of these monologues, that certain scenarios were going to prove better in that kind of monologue form, whereas others maybe didn't work as well. But, you know, we were just exposed. We were there, really, learning on the job.
Do you only ever know the script as far as what you have in your hand at that time, Sunny? Or do you, you know, have some clue, without revealing anything, obviously, but do you have any clue of your future plot?
I think, you know, if you're involved with a huge storyline like it, you know, it was with Rob and Helen, for instance, which was a massive story. I don't know, I wasn't privy to that, but I'm sure, you know, they must have been talked to about this huge storyline. I think if you do get a huge storyline, I think, yes, you're probably taken into an office somewhere and told what's going on. But generally, generally not. You get an idea. Mm-hmm. You get an idea. But the storylines can change, and that can be dependent upon the listeners' views. I mean, listeners are taken into consideration a lot. And just where storylines can develop, you know, depending on other factors. So I think although they may have an idea of where a storyline is going to end up, that things can change. We don't. And in some ways, I kind of like that because it means that I'm not going to accidentally say something that I shouldn't say at some point, because we, you know, we record 5 weeks ahead. So sometimes, you know, you're a bit confused as to where you are in your own head as to where a story is developing. But it does keep you on your toes. That's, you know, that's for sure. And I quite like that.
Do you listen?
Yes. Oh, Sunny. Gosh, I am a listener. I listen. I am a great, you know, I listen every Sunday. I'm an omnibus person, actually, just because I like the through line. And I listen both as an Archers cast member, but also as a listener outside of it, you know, because you because there are so many of us, about 80 of us, you know, in the cast, you don't always know what's completely going on with somebody else's storyline. I love it, and I just love radio. I mean, I think it's a brilliant medium because it's a bit like reading a novel. You know, you're handed your imagination, aren't you? You know, and you can create. And even though I know exactly what that studio and the mailbox looks like, and if I'm in the Bull or the Dower House, when I actually listen to the Archers, my belief is suspended, and I've got my own image of those characters and those, you know, the village and those houses and home farm. It's very interesting what the brain does, actually. You can sort of compartment, you know, put it in compartments. But I think the radio makes you work hard, I think, as a listener anyway. Mm. And I love that. It's a bit like reading a novel.
So each listener has their own version of the Bull, obviously, in their minds. It's great,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Absolutely. And the Dower House and the Green and the Shop and the, you know, and all that. And I think in the early days, very few people made, Archers actors made public appearances, I think, really to kind of, you know, keep the magic of the village alive so that you didn't know what their faces were. And then, of course, people started to, open fates and things like that. I've been in situations where, you know, people have come up to me and said, "Oh, you're Lillian. Oh, I didn't think you looked like that." Or the opposite. Say, "Oh, you're just like I imagined Lillian to be," you know. So it's, it's fascinating.
just very quickly, got three questions, or two more questions, because these are from the listeners. And that question about the criticism that the media have had of the monologues was from Melly on the Flick app. Next question from Eggstones, who I believe is in Bristol via Denmark. He says, What is your favourite gin? And then what is Lillian's favourite gin? Peter reminded us that Steve Coogan, when he creates his characters in and around Alan Partridge, has this whole kind of like mood board down to things like what is their favourite tipple? And it might not even be mentioned, he said. But it's just so that him as an actor or the other actors can completely immerse themselves into the character. So I put it to you, Sonny. What is your favourite tipple? And then what would be Lillian's, do you reckon? What would be her favourite gin?
Oh, gosh, that's interesting. Well, I mean, I have to say, I probably shouldn't say this. Gin isn't my favourite, actually. It's not my favourite. but I haven't said that. As I've got older, and I'm very ancient now, I have enjoyed the odd G&T. But, you know, I tell you what I really love. It's a pint of beer. I mean, I'm with Eddie Grundy here. I do love beer. But gin, oh, gosh. Well, I suppose, well Lillian, I mean, darling, anything. Any gin at all. You know, she's happy to down. And as long as there's a full bottle, she doesn't mind at all. I wish we could do more Scruff's gin, actually, with Lillian. I think that would be quite fun. Mm. You know, a nice storyline with the old Scruff's gin would be good fun. But no, she likes anything, love, as long as it's gin.
And then last question from Jen. What would be your dream storyline for Lillian?
Oh, that's a terrific question, isn't it? I'm going to be a bit naughty here. I would say, well, you know, maybe that, you know, for about 10 weeks, it's just the Lillian Bellamy show, you know, then nobody else appears in Ambridge, you know, it's just her. No. Dream storyline. Listen, I've had some grand storylines. The Archers have been really, really good to me. Dream storyline. You know, I think I would love it, actually, if maybe Tiger sort of returned and caused a bit of havoc in Ambridge, you know, with Justin and her. I just think that would be, I mean, I know he's been back once already, but I would love that. I do miss that relationship, I have to say. I mean, I love working with Simon, please don't get me wrong, but there was something about Lillian and Tiger and Matt that was just really interesting. I think it's because they were always in a state of conflict, the pair of them. So as an actor, it's real fun to play, you know, that. And they just work very well, I think, as characters. And vocally, I think they work really well too. Anything to do with Matt would be lovely.
You know, it would be utterly delicious and lovely. Right, so let's fast forward 30 years. Mm. You're in the laurels, right? You've got your blanket over your knees, and you hear, "Hello, pussycat." Wouldn't that be fantastic? They're just wheeling back.
I know. Well, in fact, when Kim came back this last time, you know, you probably don't remember, but that was indeed his very first, "Hello, pussycat." You know, and it was like, oh, God, he's here. Yeah, it's good fun. I think it's interesting, isn't it, sometimes how characters just can really work or voices can really work. And I think that's what happened with Kim and I. I think they just thought, because Kim hadn't been in the programme that long when I came into it. And I think quite quickly they thought, oh, that's quite interesting. You know, it's kind of it's a vocal thing sometimes. Well,
do you think if Matt hadn't cleared your bank account entirely, you might still be with him?
It's always possible. I think the thing is about Lillian, you know, she always goes for the unattainable. And of course, he is an unattainable. I always used to maintain, people used to say, you know, when she had the relationship with Paul, Matt's brother, why did she do that? And I always maintained that actually Paul and Matt looked very, very alike each other, and that Paul was in a way the good side of Matt, and Matt was the tricky one. So Paul was a lovely, kind one that gave her all the things that she wanted, whereas as Matt was always the one that was really, you know, not attainable, which is why she had the affair with Paul. So that was my reasoning.
Mm-hmm. Right, because I want to hear your take on some of these kind of listener comments which we've had for last week on The Archers. Right, so right now I'm going to press the button and you're going to hear your bête noire. Okay.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
First off, upper low east west side, it's New York.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, everyone in Dumpty Dum Towers and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. It's time to invite Linda into my office for a session. She's certainly one of my favorite Ambridge residents, as most will agree. It's difficult but understandable to hear her struggling in the aftermath of the trauma of the accident and her serious injuries. But I would say that Linda also suffers from a bit of the deadly sin of pride, which has negatively impacted her recovery. As long as we've known Linda, along with her many fine qualities, she has thought that she's a bit better than her friends and acquaintances in the village. As a result, she's had difficulty accepting that she is, quote, less than she was before, that it will be a while before or ever that she will return to her previous functioning, that her rehab will continue to be long and hard, and that she needs to reach out to her family and friends and share her fears and her less than self. I think Linda is probably the best candidate in Ambridge for therapy because she's so verbal and capable of great insights into character. I would enjoy having her as a patient. I'll let you in on a secret. There's some people you look forward to walking through the office door and some you don't. Hey, I'm now available for telepsychiatry and we'll give her a DTDD Dumpty Dum discount. Talk to you soon.
Well, that would be a good episode, wouldn't it? Witherspoon on the couch session with Linda.
Absolutely. Gosh.
I remember when we did our Zoom, you made a point of saying that the scenes you do with Carol are some of your favourite. Mm. What is she actually like as a human being, first off? Let's dispense with Linda for a little bit and then come on to what you think is magic about the pair of you together. Because I will hold my hand up and just quickly say, right, that Lumin's storyline with the beer Ambridge and her chaining herself to the rails, I didn't like that and didn't believe that one iota. But you had many other brilliant scenes together.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, Carol herself is just delightful. You know, she's a consummate actress. She's a wonderful radio actor. And I have to say that when I first came into the Archers, my very first scene, well, as Lillian, my very first scene was with her and with Trevor, who plays Eddie Grundy. And these were the two icons for me, you know, of the Archers. I was absolutely terrified. I was thinking, oh, my God, I'm quaking. But she is a consummate radio actress. And now, actually, I've sort of learned quite a lot from her, really, watching her in her relationship with the microphone. But she's just lovely. She's just a joy. She's great fun. We have a really nice time together, really. I mean, it's almost, we're a bit like an aged version of Cecily and Gwendolyn from The Importance of Being Earnest, I always think. It's sort of sparking off each other is just great, because a bit like the Matt and Lillian relationship, it's based really on conflict between them, always conflict. So it's all always much more fun to play.
But then there was that beautiful scene with you and her in at the hospital, wasn't
there? Absolutely. And that's what's been joyful, that all this carry, this whole business, is the way the relationship has developed. The one great thing that we have as soap actors, whether that's television or radio, is that you are with your character for years and years and years in a way that you aren't in any, you know, theatre or whatever, 6 months or whatever, or film or whatever. So you really get to know your character well, and so you're able to develop them and all the different, you know, levels that there are to that. Yes, it was lovely having those scenes, and their friendship, no doubt, through all of this has really deepened. And I'm so interested to see where the writers will take it, in the future, because the relationship is on a different level now, most definitely.
Yeah, which often happens with adversity, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, that's
absolutely. And with Robert as well. You know, the closeness that sort of developed it's lovely. It's great. Mm.
And of course, you share a grandson, good old Mungo.
We do indeed. And two more different people to share a grandson, you couldn't believe. The comedy will all still be there. There's absolutely no doubt about it. But I think, you know, there will be something else. There'll be another layer added now of friendship, which probably wasn't there before, of surety about each other in a way, even though they'll rub each other up the wrong way. Inevitably, they're going to. But there's a bond there.
I'm going to come on to friendship after we've had a little go with Laura.
Hello, I'm Laura, and I'm a first-time caller-innerer, so if truth be known, my tummy's feeling a little bit strange due to the whole calling-in situation. But here we go. So my archer's credentials. I am from the place formerly known as Joy Horville Land, Newcastle. And I used to live right by Shielfield, which is where she's from. Although I've never met anyone called Rochelle, I shall keep my ears open. I first started listening to the Archers 20 years ago, which I believe makes me a jazzer, which I'm incredibly proud about. And the first storyline I remember was the divvying up of the inheritance of Brookfield. And I remember Elizabeth being pretty miffed by the whole thing. I am a former primary teacher and also did a bit of social work. But these days, I spend my time hanging out with my lovely three-year-old daughter. I also have a bit of an Archer's claim to fame in that when I was at university, my flatmate told us that his friend from home was coming to stay for the night. And the friend from home turned out to be Will Sanderson Thwaite, who played the old, played Chris Carter, the old actor who played Chris Carter. And it was absolutely incredible. I was over the moon. It was very strange to have somebody staying with us who spoke in Chris Carter's voice. And I tried to be very low-key and pretend I wasn't at all a bit starstruck, but I don't think I managed. So I'm really just calling in to say hello and a big thank you. I've been very much enjoying the monologues, apart from perhaps Adam's, sadly. I am a huge Emma fan of late, and if she loses her job, I am going to go into the streets with something very angry to say to any passers-by. I just think it would be absolutely awful, beyond awful, if she were to lose her job. So I have got my fingers crossed that actually we're just being led a merry dance and she's going to actually end up doing something incredibly creative or innovative and be the saviour of the whole business. And it's definitely looking that way. I think I'm probably going to go now because I re-recorded this message so many times that if I do it again, I think my phone battery will probably go. So to all of you out there, stay safe and thanks very much.
That was lovely. That was really interesting actually, because I think there are lots of hidden depths to Emma. That's what I find so interesting about her as a character. Yeah, so we shall see what we shall see, won't we, there.
I think many of us are very holding out hope that she will not be sacked.
Yes, I think so too. Let's keep our fingers crossed.
And I think Laura's prediction has kind of come true, hasn't it? Because the end of last week, her idea with extending the room to the orchard, that seemed to be the golden bullet to get round the problem of how to keep that business afloat, or at least it's given them all a bit of hope anyway.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
So Laura obviously got out her crystal ball and got it and rubbed it down good and proper. Mm. Either that or she's got inside track with the actors or the writers.
That's
so
right.
So come on then, Sonny.
Yeah.
You know Laura. She got you on speed dial.
Sadly not. No, I know. I love that. I love that accent though. I mean, it is just the most brilliant accent, and it's quite a tricky accent to do actually. But I love it. I loved it. So thank you, Laura. Gosh, that was lovely. Yeah, and I know that feeling, Laura, of re-recording things endlessly. And in fact, I was only doing it the other day. I had to record something for a friend's birthday, and I don't know how many times I did it. It's you never think you're good enough. You never think it's right. You think, oh gosh, I've missed that. You know, it was great though. I love that. It's great.
Actually, that's one thing I was going to ask you before. When you talked about the fact that you actually do listen to the monologue, not sorry, to the monologues. When you do say that you listen to the omnibus editions. How critical are you with your performance?
Oh, terribly. Terribly, Roy. I'm sitting there, I'm going, oh, why did you do that? Oh, for goodness sake, why did you do that? Why didn't you? Yeah, I really am quite critical. It's very rare that I sort of sit there smugly going, it's quite good, really. it really is. But, you know, I think if you're not critical of your performance, then you might as well give up, because I think, you know, that's how you grow. That's how you change. That's how you become a better actor. And in all the mediums, actually. But no, I'm very critical. Very critical.
Tell you somebody who isn't critical of the Archers, they're a big, massive fan, is Kathy B.
Hello, this is Kathy B, first time caller in. I'm in West London. Hi to everybody. I just wanted to pick up on the things you were talking about Emma last week. I think you missed a trick because you didn't look at the different generation. So we compare Emma to her mum, and how she manages her marriage and how she manages her children and how she manages her career and how she dots around in the countryside with all her ambitions. So they face things very differently because of the different generations they're from. I was surprised you didn't discuss that. I also wanted to say that I'm a fairly recent convert, probably about 5 years pre-Helen and Rob blow up. But I used to have my mum listening to it in the 70s. Didn't really understand why she bothered. When I talked to her recently about whether she listens to it anymore, she says no. She used to listen to it because she grew up in the countryside and missed it coming to live in London. Now, it's not about countryside issues. It's about soap opera, which I totally disagree with. But interestingly, I think the Grundys in the past were rather comic yokel characters, and they're much more, they have much more depth, and there's much more interest in their social situation. So for me, modern Archers is the right thing. By the way, if you want a good dum-de-dum, I'm sure Billy Connolly did one. He talked a lot about how it should be our national anthem, going back a bit. Have fun. Have a good week. Bye.
Oh, Kathy B. I thought Kathy B was going to offer to do a dum-de-dum.
Yes, I was waiting.
But yeah. Yeah, she's right about we didn't talk about the different generations, did we, Royfield? But I'm not surprised we didn't, because we talk about nonsense most of the time. Rather than being...
And did you see the way I rather cleverly said that she wasn't critical of the Archers, but she was critical of us? For not
quite rightly.
And another person from the old stomping ground, West London. So welcome on board, newish dum-de-dummer, Kathy B. All right, now it's my old pal, it's Claire from Clapham.
Hi, dum-de-dum, Claire from Clapham here. I thought I would just reflect, but as we're coming presumably towards the end of the monologues now, with the potential for some normal type episodes in the future, I think there are some things that the monologues have done quite well. And this week I was given to think two or three things of that. First of all, Alice's internal self-delusion about her alcoholism is quite well served through the monologues, and does feel pretty realistic. Secondly, the stuff with Linda and Robert this week, although not the most comfortable listening at times, I think that it was interesting to see how they were both interpreting the same situation differently. And I think that would have been, I mean, you could have done it through conversations with other characters, but not for this kind of thing, because they wouldn't have gone away and talked about those sort of intimate issues with other people. So that was quite good. And then finally, kind of Emma's and Natasha's sort of self-awareness this week. We're always complaining as listeners when someone does something that we think is out of character. We're like, oh, they would never do that. But actually, Emma showed a certain amount of emotional maturity this week, and we were sort of talked through the process. And I think that that helps us to understand where that's come from, when if she'd just been more reasonable without normally reacting like Emma we would expect to, we would have all complained. So I think that was quite effective as well. So the monologues have their uses in some ways. That was my thing that I wanted to say. Okay, keep up the good work. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
I think she's very right. Would you say so? Yeah,
I think so. I think they work. Yeah. They work better in some scenarios than others, don't they? I think there's no doubt about that. And but again, this is all part of our learning curve, or the production team's learning curve, rather, as we have gone on with it. But I think in some ways it has been quite interesting, hasn't it? Listening to the inner voices with some characters and their takes on situations.
Yeah, the Linda and Robert thing especially, I thought, you know, they were both worrying about the same thing in such very different ways. Mm-hmm. And she's right, that wouldn't perhaps quite have come out in the same way had they been able to have more of a dialogue.
That's right, yeah. In certain scenarios or certain storylines that are going on, they actually work very well, don't they?
Claire is completely right, because in the traditional Archers, either character would have had to have confided in another character, wouldn't they? So you could imagine Robert maybe speaking to Jim, or maybe speaking to Neil and Neil getting a bit, I don't know about this, you know, Robert, like not being able to answer, which would be great in and of itself, but you wouldn't have had pure distilled Robert and his thoughts because you'd have had the interaction with another character and ditto with Lillian. So I actually do agree massively with Claire here that this is an area where the monologues have actually served the storylines quite well.
Yeah.
And another thing is that the arc that Emma went on last week is almost a microcosm of her becoming an adult within the village, wasn't it? Because it's her trying to dampen down maybe her initial kind of like instincts and what she would do, you know, kind of go at it with Fallon, be much more calm, measured, taking the counsel of her partner, taking that on board, being more measured, being restrained, and then her trying to be a leading light within the village, but in the context of the Flower and Project show.
Yeah.
So in lots of ways, you know, it kind of distills her, you know, being an adult Grundy / Carter, really.
That's right. It's the maturation of the character suddenly, isn't it? Yes.
That's which is the word I was looking for.
Thank you, Royfield.
You're good.
But we would never have heard her talking herself down from those heated text messages and things, would we? If it wasn't a monologue, it's great.
That's right. And I think it's interesting as well because everything that, you know, she and Ed have been through, this traumatic experience they've been through coming back together again, inevitably those huge things in anyone's life will move you on, will deepen you as a human being, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. So it's quite interesting, the juxtaposition of all that in relationship to that backdrop of when they split up and now being back together. Yeah, interesting.
Sonny, in future, can you just be my editor? So I'll like witter on for maybe like 30 seconds. You just say, the word you're searching for, Royfield, is this.
Right. No. But the thing is, Royfield, I've got time. I can sit back and absorb. I can listen to you. I've got time for the brain to filter through. No, it's lovely. It's lovely what you were saying. It's just that word came to mind. I thought, she's kind of maturing.
Okay.
Bit like a brandy, Madura.
Right. From Claire from Clapham in Bedford, not the Clap in South London, we go to Borstal Heath, Speed 12. It's Simon in Birmingham.
Hello, Royfield and the Dumpty Dum Gang. This is B12 Simon calling from Borstal Heath in the heart of the Midlands. I've just listened to Tuesday's episode and with Linda trying to rekindle her love life with Robert. And I think it's an important part of recovery that the writers and the actors handled brilliantly. What a great episode, probably one of the better ones of the monologue era. And also just getting Emma in on the act, getting her all riled up, was a lovely touch as well. So yeah, well done writers, well done actors. Really one of the best episodes in a while. That's my 2p anyway. Thanks so much for continuing to provide my favourite Archer's podcast. All the best. Bye-bye now.
Oh, that's lovely. That's really lovely to hear that, actually. Have the positivity of that. Brilliant.
Yeah, very efficiently put as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
B12 Simon, we thank you for that. And Crumbs, we're going all around the country. So we had a bit of the West Midlands, we've had a bit of Bedfordshire. Now we're up in South Yorkshire. It's Rotherham and Helen.
Hello, everybody. It's Helen from Rotherham here. I just wanted to ring in just to say how much I've really enjoyed the monologues this week. I think whoever the writer was for this week has really used the monologues in the best way. And they've used them excellently, not just to portray or to say what's going on in the world of Ambridge, but actually to give us a real insight into not only what the actors or the characters, sorry, they're not actors, they're real people, are thinking, but also how our minds work as humans. And I'm thinking specifically about the story with Linda, you know, on Tuesday's episode, we saw her conversation with Emma, and then we saw Linda saying, oh, she was just saying those nice things to be polite. Mm. Oh, I just look ridiculous in this and all the rest of it. And yet then we click to Emma and she's absolutely admiring Linda. We go back and we see Linda saying, oh, Robert's probably looking at my scars and what are these ridiculous earrings I'm wearing? And we click to Robert and he's just adoring her. And so actually it made me think, yeah, probably most of the time people are thinking about me or about anybody more positively than we think about ourselves. And I think that's a really good thing to remember. We beat ourselves up and we shouldn't, but most people are thinking a lot better of us. But then secondly, in Wednesday's episode with Linda and Robert, we saw that they were both having very similar thoughts. Oh my goodness, our marriage is, you know, on the rocks and everything. And yet they kept it to themselves. If they'd have just been open and honest with each other, it might have really helped. So we don't know what other people are thinking. It's usually better than we give them credit for or that we imagine. But also we need to be really open with how we're feeling with other people because they can't read our minds, even though we can read the minds of people in Ambridge at the minute. All right. Have a lovely week. Hope that all made sense. Bye.
That was great, wasn't it?
Yes, very profound, very profound. It was great though. She's right. I think particularly I'm so pleased that this storyline seems to be grabbing people actually, because I think it's a really lovely one, and particularly because it's, you know, this is an older couple as well. You know, it applies to all generations. It's not about younger people either, you know, and the trauma that this sort of thing can have on people's identity, really, and physical identity and emotional identity.
Yeah, because Linda's actually fearful that this may break them up, isn't she? She's mentioned this, absolutely. You know, perish the thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had the most, oh God, it's going to make me cry. but basically, it's kind of my childhood sweetheart. I used to fancy her when I was 15 and we're in the same class together. And I think we held hands about three times and had one kiss and it lasted for all of 2 weeks. And 25 years later, we had a school reunion and it was just amazing how you just regress to being a teenager. So I'm in my like mid 40s and then all of a sudden I was a teenager again. And we started talking and she said, I shouldn't be here. And I went, what? You know, you weren't going to come tonight. She said, no, I had like stage 3 cancer and I'm a nurse and I knew it was curtains. But we went through the most aggressive treatment and I survived. My marriage didn't, but I survived. And she asked me afterwards if I would look at her scars. And even now it makes me like well up. And she was crying and she said, I'm the first person to see her scars. And she says, am I still a person? You know?
Oh
God. Yeah. It was just like, yeah. I gave her such a hug. Yeah. And it was just like the teenage us crying. And that storyline with Linda, I'm going to start crying again. Yeah. Linda saying that to Robert just so reminded me of my that. Little Debbie. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it is so traumatic. And I think, I mean, I've had friends, you know, who've had breast cancer and stuff like this. And, you know, it is that thing. They just don't feel, you know, that they are human, really, that they've been disfigured and that nobody will find them, not even just sexually attractive, but just attractive, that they've been damaged in some way. And it's
a huge part of your identity goes and you don't feel you are yourself.
No, absolutely not.
It's utterly a wonderful storyline and
it
in
is
typical it's yeah in typical Archer's fashion it's been dealt with very sensitively and with such humanity, you know. And then there's Robert who just wants her to be stronger and it's not quite right because she's still healing and actually part of her healing is for her to touch it in a sexual way, you know.
Indeed. And that thing, I think, you know, which again is touched on with this particular storyline, but when you're in a relationship like that, you know, how much do you treat
your partner with kid gloves? When does it start to become more equal again? Because you don't want to hurt them emotionally, physically. Mm-hmm. You know, they're kind of possibly missing each other. But it's done with love. You know, you need to be braver. I don't know. It is fascinating. It's this is where the monologues, I think, have worked well, because you are getting those inner thoughts, aren't you?
Mm. Yeah.
Oof. Right, well, there's me wiping away a tear. Right, and let's end up with Christopher.
Hello, everybody. Goodness, it's a long time since I have called in, because I haven't been listening. And I caught up on months of Archers during a long hill walk at the weekend there. And I like it. I do. I know that isn't shared by many people. I live a fairly solitary kind of life. And other than my 7-year-old son, I don't have many conversations of note. So this internal monologue business kind of rings true to me. It's how I communicate, certainly to myself, and how I kind of order things in my brain. So it kind of felt authentic somehow to me. I was delighted to be proven utterly correct about Joy. And I'm not at all resentful at all the Johnny-come-lately Joy fans who have suddenly appeared. You are all very welcome. As far as lockdown goes, I've been kind of amused by the notion that Ambridge has gone from being the only part of Britain not observing COVID restrictions and social distancing to being the only part of Britain who is currently observing. I do feel, though, that the scriptwriters have missed a trick in the lack of curtain twitching that's been going on in Ambridge during lockdown, which kind of became a sort of national sport in the rest of the UK, you know, tutting at neighbours who've been spotted going to Morrison's more than once a week. I feel like Susan and possibly Helen would have been brilliant at, getting on to people for having walking their dog too much. So I think they missed a trick there. But listen, guys, thank you for keeping us all going.
That's great. That's lovely. What a beautiful accent. I love that voice. Day. That was lovely.
He hadn't rung in for a while and we were longing for him to do so, weren't we?
Great.
You can see why.
Absolutely. No, it's great. I think it's interesting as well, just chipping my 2 pence with the idea of, you know, maybe initially, you know, it was a COVID-free environment. I mean, again, I happened to be in recording at the time when COVID was just taking off, and it was a discussion within the production office as to whether, you know, it should be mentioned or not. But the problem is, because we record sort of 4 or 5 weeks ahead, it would have meant extracting scenes, rewriting them again. And of course, by the time it had gone out, things could have moved on, things could have changed. So it was a little bit tricky to do, you know, because every scene would have had to be changed because things were moving on so quickly, as we well remember, with the COVID thing, that I think it would have become almost impractical. And actually, you wouldn't have been able, you just spent all your time in studio redoing scenes rather than making the scenes that you were trying to make. And I think also, I suspect as well, with the monologues and things that we do, everything has to be a little bit general in what's going out. I mean, obviously it's we're talking about COVID, we're alluding to it. But again, because we don't know when the episodes go out, what the situation will be. So it's general. It's quite tricky, I think.
Absolutely can see that has totally been the reason why you've got to, skirt around it somewhat. Yeah. Though Christopher's point that, you know, if it could have been recorded contemporaneously, a bit of Susan. Would have been brilliant, you know, her in the corner shot, all proper PPD up, having a mask, with a bit of plexiglass, you know, between her and Jim for arguments. It would have been utterly fantastic.
Would have been brilliant.
Now, Kerry Warburton, Auntie Kerry, do we need to admonish the good parishioners of the Dumdy Dum Parish? Because I've got a sneaky feeling we've got not one, not two, we've got none at all in terms of emails this week.
This is right. Yeah. Do you think, has your email broken, Royfield?
Do you remember back in the 70s when your TV was on the fritz, you just hit it round the back? Yeah. Right. I did hit my laptop round the back, expecting some emails just to shake out of it, but none happened, you know. So I really am looking at you. There is somebody sat in their bed, headphones on, partner next to them, gently snoring, listening to this. Yes, you. You. Right. Why the hell haven't you written us an email? It's very easy. You go onto dumdydum.com, hit contact us, and you can just like type away on your phone, or even better still, the number at the start of the show that we repeat at the end of the show, you can use that to send us a text. Now, I don't know exactly where you are because it's pretty dark in your bedroom right now with your partner snoring next to you, but do not let me down. Otherwise, I will IP trace you and come round and give you the proper verbals next week if I don't get an email from the collective parish of Dumdydums. So there you go, endeth my admonishment. Could you distill that down into maybe one word for me, Sunny?
Oh, what? Sorry, I was miles away then. Sorry.
That was very honest. Well done. Well done.
I am on the ball, listeners. I am on the ball, really.
He does have this effect on people. Yes. It's funny, honestly.
Have I got to admonish somebody? Oh, no.
Encourage people to write in.
Write in, email in, anything for Roy Field. Oh gosh, funny. I'm a sad person. I'm very old, you see, listeners. So, you know, every now and again, I sort of nod off. I go for my own.
Right. I tell you what, in the nicest possible way, you can have 40 winks, but no more than that right now. No, you shouldn't, because right now it's Sandra. It's her first time doing the social media roundup.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Hello, this is Sandra Jenkinson with my first social media roundup.
from a rather grey Waterlooville, and I've just had a soggy moggy around my ankles, so I imagine it's damp outside. Well, over to the Archers. One of the main stories this week centred around Fallon, Emma and the Tea Room, with Bridge Farm not agreeing to continue with the rent reduction and the prospect of Emma being made redundant. Over in Archer's Appreciation, Leon Devine asked if people thought that Natasha was heartless. Well, there was agreement. I don't think there was anyone supportive of her. And Natasha was referred to by names I couldn't possibly repeat here. It was suggested that Natasha would have known that Fallon hadn't had time to speak to Emma. Samantha Jackson wondered if Natasha had let the cat out of the bag accidentally on purpose. There has been suggestion across the groups that she wants the space for herself. We were inside Emma's head quite a bit this week, and I think we all do sympathise with Emma over the uncertainty caused by Natasha's letting the cat out of the bag. However, on Dumpty Dum, Witherspoon said that he is tired of being inside Emma's head. Oh dear. Sandra Griggs said that she'd quite enjoyed listening to Emma battling with her inner Susan. Yeah, I think we all appreciate that. There was agreement that it is short-sighted of Bridge Farm not to continue with the temporary rent reduction. On Dumpty Dum, Patricia Sharps wondered if Helen had considered that a rent rise might cause Fallon to go out of business. In that case, there'd be no rent coming in at all. There were other suggestions. In Archer's Appreciation, Petrozina Thomas thought that Fallon should look elsewhere, maybe even operating out of the Bull as a daytime business. In Archer's Hotel, Ben Johnson suggested Brookfield, as they had installed a snazzy new kitchen ready to cater for weddings. Finally, Emma was talked to by Fallon. Andy Bent on Dumpty Dum felt a bit shortchanged that we didn't get to hear the conversation. Yeah, I think some of us might agree with that. People picked up on Fallon hesitating when Nasha congratulated her. And the pregnancy suggestions came up. In Archer's Appreciation, Rita O'Brien McDonald said, well, not Fallon, but how about Alice is so drunk she forgets her birth control and gets pregnant? Linda Hans thought that a pregnancy was a red herring in Archer's Appreciation. The other main topic was Linda and Robert, with Linda wanting to reconnect with Robert in a physical way and let their bodies do the talking. A lot of people thought that we were getting too much information there, and I noticed that I'm not the only one who remembered the phrase magic time. Jeff Holden on Archer's Appreciation was one person who referred to it. Trisha Tiatima was happy to air the fact that ladies in their 70s still do have sexual congress. And one other thought from Martin Langley in Archer's Appreciation. He said, Robert, at times like this, I always ask myself, what would Nelson Gabriel have done? And I'm sure we all often do that. Over in Archer's Hotel, Catherine Meadows suggested that Coq au Vin may be the new chili. And in Dumpty Dum, Caroline Peach said, oh my God, how I love Linda and Robert as a couple. They are just perfect for each other. And yes, I agree with that. Well, that's the roundup for this week. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Sandra, thank you for that. Waterlooville, it sounds utterly charming. Now, Auntie Kerry Warburton.
Yes.
Right. These tweets of the week, right?
Oh, God.
You sound like you're going to the dentist. You're spreading fun and mirth around.
Yes, I'd like to hope so.
Right. So with fun and mirth on our minds, hit us with the tweets of the week.
So this one is from Julia Lee, who is at Julia Lee Author on the Twitters. Mm-hmm. She says, Natasha's basically an Avon lady crossed with that lorry that used to deliver fizzy pop in my youth. Webinar that.
Well, that's made both of us laugh. All three of us.
This one is from Rich Cuts, who is at Cuts Rich on the Twitters. He says, enjoy the rest of your day, folks. I'm off to check if I have a surprise orchard round the back of my house.
Well done. Two for two, Warburton. Well done.
Oh, this is from Ninzi, who's at Ninzi. She says, Nasha doesn't have any understanding of human relationships. She makes Brian look hypersensitive. Oh dear. I love Brian. I'll have nothing, no bad words said about him. this is from Pajama Llama, who is at Shaz Llama. They say, thanks for a great Archer's Omnibus tweet along. See you later. I'm off to direct a veggie vision film called Spudfellas, starring Ray Leek Otter and Joe Pieske.
Wow.
Pease. Leeks, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a
bit of a stretch.
It was a little bit of a stretch in the end.
Yeah, yeah. This last one is a bit saucy. and it's in terms of Linda was trying to entice Robert, wasn't she, into the bedroom?
Tweet of the week.
Yes, right, this is tweet of the week.
Tweet of the week music swelling in the background. Go.
Yeah. This is from Matthew, who's at Mr. Weir. And he says, dress up as a great crested grebe, Linda. That should give him a corduroy teepee.
Well, Burton, well done this week. There were some proper laughs from all concerned. Yes. Well done. And well done to everybody that wrote those wonderful tweets. We're just about to wind things up. But before we absolutely do, I say this, go to dumdydum.com. Go there and see the wonderful things that you can do in the whole world of dumdydum. You can like watch Sunny do the Friday Zoom that she did a few weeks ago. We did have a lot of fun, didn't we?
We did, and you admired my top.
Myself and my mother, we both admired your frock.
Now, look, where is your mum? I'd hope she might make an appearance today or would say hello. It was wonderful when I was watching her and she'd bring in a cup of tea to you. And
she's a little bit of a renegade, is my mum. Whenever I'm at home and I say, right, very clearly, I have to say, I'm recording, because otherwise she's on YouTube. My brother's doing whatever he's doing on Netflix and it chews up the bandwidth. So the whole house knows when I'm doing stuff. But she also knows that she has a little bit of a following with dum-de-dum and dum-de-dummers and stuff. So she burst in on the pretext of bringing me my dinner, even though I told her, keep out. But, you know, so, but yeah, what was lovely, because she does deliberately walk in and give me cups of tea when we record when I'm home in Birmingham. When we did a couple of the live shows in Brum, she has come along and had a round of applause and stuff. And so people are like, oh, my mum's here. Oh, right, Bill's mum. So yes, she hogs quite the right. limelight, does my mother.
And yeah. Quite right too. Well, I'm a fan as well, so you know that's marvelous. I hope to get to meet her one day. Lovely.
Oh, at least not. We're gonna sort that out. So dumdydum.com. You can see all the actors in the Friday Zooms. You can go back into the archive, into the treasure troves, and you can see listen to all of the old episodes. You can see Mike Hatton's and his character count roundups, and they are a thing to behold. And good old Cosmo, and he does these podcast roundups. And sometimes he actually talks about the podcast. You know, if ever a man goes off piste, it's Cosmo, but he does it with such style. Now, one way you can support our shows by going to patreon.com and giving us $2 per episode. And that way, it means that we can sort out Auntie Kerry Warburton's rider. As you know, she's got Ian Botham in the corner, oiling her down just before she goes on mic, just making sure that she's all supple and limber. And
Jesus Christ!
Yeah, come on!
What sort of show is this?
Anything to keep my co-host happy, Sonny. You know, and then also it means that Sonny can be driven round here in a gold-plated limo and just make sure, you know. And we just want you just want our co-host to be happy and comfortable and confident on mic. So $2 per episode, actually what it really does, it pays for hosting and speak pipe. And for when things go up the fritz, it means that our man can actually fix it. So $2 per show, that's Patreon. However, we know that times are hard. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Maybe you've been furloughed from work, worrying if you've even got a job to go to. So if you haven't got $2 per show, do not worry, but you can support us by going on to Apple iTunes or a podcatcher of your choice and writing us a little review and say, oh, that's Sunny, she's wonderful. You know, really got some insight from her. Oh, and Auntie Kerry Warburton, she's great too. And just say that you just, you know, after, through gritted teeth, you know, just like get through my little Royfield bits. That's fine. So it's 5 stars. That would be awesome.
Remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 0203 031 3105 to leave a message, or send a text message starting with dumb to 077-862-00690.
Twitter. It's the place where in, I was going to say, how many characters are there you're allowed to have in Twitter now? They doubled it about 2 years ago.
Is it 280, I think?
Yeah. Something like that. Where I still manage to balls up anything that I manage to say because I can't write for Toffee. However, if you want to see really well-formed tweets, Kerry, Orbis, where can people follow you on Twitter?
Good heavens. At Kerry Warbis, KerriWarbis.
Now, I know also that if you want to see what's happening in the world of Dum-de-Dum, you can follow at Dum-de-Dum on the Twitters. Also, you can follow at Yokelbear, ex of this parish. He's rather funny and very, very honest on the Twitters. Also, there's Pete Ficklin, me old mucker, me old pal, me old beauty. That's an old Archer's kind of phrase there. A man who I met in a pub in Oakland, California, thought to myself, I kind of quite like him. And here we are 3 years later doing a podcast about the Archers. You can follow him where he's quite simply at Pete Fickling. Now, Sunny.
Yes. Yes.
You are there, aren't you?
Certainly I'm here.
Okay, smashing. If somebody wanted to follow you on Twitter, how do they find you?
This is so sad. I mean, I do have a Twitter account. I don't use it terribly often, but I think it's just sunny.ormond or something like that. I mean, if you'll find me on there. Just stick Sunny Ormond in and I'll pop up. But I'm not very I'm not very technical. So, you know, in fact, when we went into lockdown and I had to, you know, record from home, it was a complete nightmare. Thank goodness my son was here because I would have had a nervous breakdown trying to download all this software. So this is a long-winded answer. I don't know. Just look for Sunny Ormond. I'm not very good for my own publicity, really, am I? But, you know, there you go.
Well, but you have a wonderfully unique name, so that's excellent.
They'll find me.
Well, yes. Yeah, that's exactly what you are. You're at Sunny Ormond. So you were correct.
Was I?
You doubted yourself. There is no dot.
I set it up, you know, and I'm a very sad lady, folks out there, you know. I'm old now. It's hard. Hard work living.
I tell you what isn't hard work, joining the Dum-de-Dum group on Facebook. Now, everybody knows my feelings about Facebook. It is the thing which is driving us off of a cliff in terms of the commons, in terms of civil discourse, because there's Russians on there doing nefarious things in all of our democracies. However, there are little nice bits of Facebook, and one of the nice bits of Facebook is the Dum-de-Dum group. So go on to Facebook if you like a bit of Facebook, and if you like a bit of Facebook, you're probably on Facebook. So whilst you're on Facebook, type in Dum-de-Dum, and you'll find us on Facebook. There is the Flick app. Quite simply, get your smartphone out. You go to your store, where all the apps are, you click that, type in Flick, and then download that, type in Dum-de-Dum, bish, bosh, bang, and you join the gang that way. Now, just before I completely forget and I say goodbye to Sunny and to Auntie Kerry Warburton, on Facebook is one way you can show your love for Dum-de-Dum, because a lot of people actually do this. Quite simply, after your name, scroll along to the flags bit on your phone and find the international symbol for bunting. It's also known as the flag of Nepal. Go and put that next to your name, and then we know that you're a Dum-de-Dummer. Things eventually will happen. I don't know what they are, but when I've thought about them, I will bestow good things upon you all. So quite simply, get your phone out if you're on the Twitters and just like find the international symbol for bunting the flag of Nepal. Put that next to your name. And then...
Sounds like flag of nipple, I'm having to say to you. But so you look for the flag of nipple. Marvellous.
You know what? I always keep this show upstanding, erudite, and away from smut, filth, and innuendo. So thank you.
You shouldn't have bringing
it right at the end of the show. Now, just before I say ta-ra a bit, is there anything you'd like to say to the mass ranks of dum-de-dummers on planet Earth who are listening to you right now? Sunny, this is your moment.
This is my moment. I would just like to say thank you to all the listeners out there, really, you know, for bearing with us over the last few months. And I know it's not been for some, you know, the best listen, but bless your hearts for continuing to listen. And we really do appreciate you out there for just being part of our world, because without you, we wouldn't be the Archers. So I'm just sending lots of love out to everyone, and just keep safe, everyone. Just keep safe.
Lovely words. Now, before we go on to B Corner, we're going to round off the episode with B Corner. Auntie Kerry Warburton, would you like to say anything to the listeners?
I would like to be very self-indulgent. Ooh, at this point. Okay. And I'm begging Sunny to say Kerry darling.
Right, here we go, Dan. Kerry darling.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
All right, darling. Anytime.
Oh, good.
All right, folks. Now, if you've waited all the way through, if you've waded all the way through this episode, you've come to the end, but not quite. There's another bit to come. It's B Corner, and this is wonderful.
Hello, lovely people. It's Sue here, Queen or Tart on the Twitter. Royfield keeps asking about bees, so I thought it was time to give him a few facts about them. I could talk about bees for days, literally days. I've been keeping them for about 5 years, and I'm still learning from them because bees don't read the same books as beekeepers do. But anyway, let's have a few things for him to think about. There are about 20,000 species of bees all over the world. In the UK, we've got 22 species of British bumblebees. They're called all sorts of funny names: red-tailed, bilberry, buff-tailed. Some of them are solitary. Some of them live together in called social groups, much like us, really. There's a British Bumblebee Conservation Trust, who you can find out all sorts of information on their website. Now, I'm going to talk about honeybees next, which is the ones that we keep in order to get honey. The queen bee lives for about 3 to 5 years, somewhere around there, and everything she does is directed by the workers. So she's not a queen like we might think of her as a queen. She basically exists to lay eggs, about 20,000 eggs a day in the summer. The workers are all female, and they do lots of different jobs. There's nursemaids and cemetery bees and all sorts of things. I can talk about them another time. The drones are all male, and they basically sit around the hive with their feet up, doing nothing, being fed honeybee by the workers. Their only job is to go out for a bit of magic time, as Lindy would say, with a different version queen from a different hive. And if they succeed, then their genitals get ripped off. And at the end of the summer, whoever's left all gets kicked out of the hive by the workers and they all die. So a normal bee, a worker bee, might last about 6 weeks in the summer. The flying bees go out and they collect up nectar, and each individual bee collects about a 1/12 of a teaspoon of honey worth of nectar in their whole lifetime. So remember to scrape out the jar thoroughly when you've finished it. I've got loads more to tell you, but we can do that in another call later on. Bye all.
That's been us. That's been another dum-de-dum. And I think you've been right royally entertained. So I'm going to say ta-ra a bit from me. What about you, Sunny? How do you sign off?
I think ta-ra a bit's great, actually. Yeah. Actually, in Welsh, you'd say nastar, good night. So nastar, there you go.
Right, Kerry. Try and follow that.
In Latvian, you would say a labunakti.
There you go. We've done it.
That was a stunned silence.